And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. The University of Cincinnati is helping to track the notoriously secretive jaguar in the Central American country of Belize. Jaguars are so elusive and difficult to follow that they're nicknamed Shadow Cat. However, UC Associate Professor of Geology and Anthropology, Brooke Crowley, was able to analyze jaguar droppings shipped to her lab to assist in this effort. And Professor Crowley is with us in the studio. Thanks for being here.
Absolutely. Thank you for inviting me.
If you'd like to join our conversation, please do give us a call, 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter, and we'll look for your comments and your tweets there. Dr. Crowley, why is this an important issue, the tracking of jaguars?
Well, there's a number of reasons. Jaguars are a keystone species, which means that they are a species that has larger effects than just themselves. They're apex predators, which means they feed at the top of the food chain, and consequently, they regulate the populations of herbivores, which in turn regulates healthy vegetation communities and habitats.
So there's a lot of impact across the ecosystem that these cats have.
Absolutely.
So for people who are driving around listening to us or sitting at their desks listening to this conversation and trying to actually picture a jaguar in their minds, can you help us a little bit illustrate just how big these cats are and powerful?
Absolutely. So I've actually never seen a jaguar outside of a zoo, but they are very big cats. They're the largest cat in North America, and they're the third largest cat in the world. Sorry, in America, in the New World, and they're the third largest cat in the world. They're only smaller than lions and tigers.
Wow. Okay. And they're really strong,
they
too.
They are.
Right?
They're quite strong.
They kill their prey by crushing their skulls?
That's my understanding. They can actually eat bones.
Okay. And then what they do is, I understand, they'll kill their prey and occasionally drag it for pretty far distances. And I'm wondering, do you know if there's like some evolutionary backstory to that, like why that's important that they kill and possibly travel with it?
Well, this is actually something that a lot of cat species do. Oftentimes, if you kill prey, it happens in a place where you're exposed, not just to, you know, maybe other jaguars or other predators. And so you want to take your prey to some place where you can eat it in privacy and not worry about it getting stolen from you.
Interesting.
Maybe you can stash it somewhere.
Yeah. Okay. So the reason we explore that, the way they kill and what they do with what they kill, is because it's part of what you're studying. It's the research involves tracking jaguars by analyzing the digested bones and the fecal matter that results from their eating habits. Can you tell us how that's helpful?
Sure. So despite the fact that jaguars are very popular, we know a lot about them in popular culture. They're big cats. They're charismatic. We don't know that much about how they spend their time. We don't know how much we don't know that much about how they move across landscapes. And this is, you know, surprising because we've been studying them for a very long time. But they're elusive and they're solitary and they're very wary of people. And so it's hard to study them in the wild. So by studying fecal matter and scat or droppings from jaguars, we can actually track where they eat their meals and then add that information to where they poop. And we get a good understanding of where they spend their time in a particular landscape.
Okay. And so these droppings are collected out in the field and then shipped to you. So you have sort of the scientist approach to what's going on. But somebody was out there collecting this stuff. What does that field work look like? Who's out there doing that?
So this is a highly collaborative project, which I'm going to go ahead and say is true for pretty much all science. And this is a project that I've been doing in collaboration with colleagues at other institutions who are field biologists and have been working with jaguars for their careers. So they have been going out in Belize, and they have dogs that are actually scat-detecting dogs.
Wow.
These are dogs that have been trained to sniff out different types of poop from different species. So they go out in the field, in the forest with these dogs. And the dogs are excited. They find the poop. The poop is collected. And they can smell little tiny fragments of poop that we would
right?
never see.
What kind of dog?
My understanding is these are dogs that are typically pound dogs.
Okay.
And so there's nothing special about them other than they are trainable and excited about poop and interested in being part of a team.
There's not like a litter box out in the woods or anything that you can find
No.
wild cat poo in, right? Okay. and then how is it? I mean, just I realize the type of conversation we're having, but it is important.
Yes.
So when it's collected, how is it saved and preserved?
Usually it's frozen. So there's some sort of the research takes place in a field station. So you go back to your field station in the evening and you put your samples in the deep freeze. And they can also be stored dry. But because my colleagues are primarily geneticists, they want their samples to be frozen so they don't degrade further.
And then it comes to you.
Yes.
And that's where some interesting stuff is taking place too, because that's where your work comes in. So what happens in your lab?
Yes, well, actually all sorts of interesting things behind a locked door. So I am an isotope ecologist by trade. And what that means is I'm a chemical detective. I study animal interactions today and in the past, and I use the chemistry of animal tissues and other biological materials like leaves and grass and poop or urine to understand what an animal eats and how animals move around.
And this all sounds rather complicated and difficult to have different teams out in the field, collecting these specimens, shipping them back to you for analysis, all to figure out where these jaguars are going. But other methods that have been attempted to track jaguars, they're either challenging or they fail for a variety of reasons, such as like GPS. That can all be very difficult, right?
Yes. I mean, all methods have both their merits and their limitations. And so our goal is to just continually increase the toolkit that biologists can use to track elusive animals like jaguars. So indeed, we could collar animals and then track individuals with GPS or satellite collars. You have to actually trap an animal to do that and add a collar. It's only going to tell you about an individual cat.
And you're talking about trying to trap a pretty large,
yes,
ferocious
animal.
Yes,
this is involved, yes. So our method is non-invasive, which is nice. We don't ever have to actually interact with the cats. And there's other things that can also be analyzed in the feces. So the colleagues with whom I've been working are geneticists, Claudia Wolch in particular. For her dissertation, she actually genetically identified each fecal sample, not just to the species of cat, but the individual cat. So using that information, when we look at the chemical composition of the poop, we're actually, we can say, this is Jaguar 5. He pooped over here, but he ate his meal on the other side of this reserve.
Wow.
So it's really complementary work. It's another really cool tool that works quite well, specifically with genetics.
You note that some of the prey consumed by jaguars include small birds and rodents, but they also eat larger animals. You told me that they'll eat like a caiman, which is like a crocodile.
Yes.
They'll eat armadillos.
Yes.
What do those types of animals tell us about where the jaguar might be?
Well, we know today that jaguars seem to prefer denser habitat, and they're mostly associated with tropical forest. Specifically in Central America, there's large tracts of remaining forest in eastern Mexico, the Mayan lowlands, into Belize and Guatemala, down into Costa Rica. And then the Amazonian basin is the other large place that we see most jaguar populations today.
They don't roam too far up here anymore.
They don't. They used to be found in North America. And from time to time, we do still see individual cats. The most recent sighting is one that was first sighted in 2011. His name is El Jefe. And he's been seen repeatedly in Arizona. But there's no like breeding population currently of jaguars in North America.
What's the status of jaguars? Has it relates to being endangered or threatened?
They're considered near threatened by the IUCN. However, that's the International Union of, what does the IUCN stand
that's
for?
Okay. But Google it.
They're the people who make decisions about different species and their status. But there are different populations of jaguars, and some of them seem to be much more threatened than others. So the Amazonian population is the largest, and they are of least concern. The other populations of jaguars, there's 34 other distinct populations that are recognized, are all either critically endangered or endangered, actually.
Is there any hope that the research that you're conducting with the other researchers could help?
Absolutely. So one thing that we're very interested in is how much the jaguars can move across fragmented landscapes. One of the main threats to jaguars today is the loss of their remaining habitat. So things like rivers aren't really a problem for jaguars. They swim, they can cross those without an issue. Roads and other things like agriculture areas, urban areas, mining operations, fences, walls, these all present a pretty major dilemma for jaguars. They get hit by cars and they're shot by farmers. So to be able to understand how jaguars move across landscapes, we need to be able to actually track that. And how limited are they? How mobile are they? This is something that our research is going to be able to help answer.
I read that some of those issues facing jaguars, whether they are being shot by farmers who feel like their livestock may be attacked by the jaguar, or just being hit by cars on the road like any animal here in North America, that's impacted some of this research, right? Because you may be tracking one of these animals that gets hit by a car.
Indeed. And of the studies that I... In my literature reviews, putting together the paper that we wrote and thinking about this project in the first place, there's a number of studies that were curtailed early because the animal that they were tracking met an early demise.
Oh, wow.
It's kind of sad.
That is sad. One issue that seems to be related to the population of jaguars is just nature. It's how they reproduce, which I learned was rather slowly.
Yes. So like many carnivores, they have to train and teach their young. So they put a lot of investment into few young and they reproduce slowly. So you may have two cubs every few years. And those cubs remain with their mother as she teaches them and helps them grow and learn. And so they don't produce very quickly. And because their population isn't that large, it's not going to be replenished that rapidly.
How long are the cubs spending with their mother before they're free to roam alone? Do we know that?
We do know that. Do I know that offhand? I'm not sure.
Oh, I apologize for putting you on the spot for that. But I did read that they basically just have like one or two cubs at a time.
They do, yes. It seems like maybe they stay with her for at least a year, maybe more, maybe two.
With jaguars being one of the species at the top of the food chain, and I have to tell you, I'm already terrified of them. Not only they crush your skull, you now tell me they will forge the river. They'll swim across a river as well. That's quite terrifying.
And they can climb.
But they are important to the ecosystem.
Yes, they are.
What would their disappearance, what would that be like for the ecosystem?
Well, we have seen evidence for what happens when apex predators disappear from environments. And what typically happens is the herbivore populations explode. And then they eventually eat all the vegetation. And so there can be these sort of cascading effects that are very hard for anything to recover from. A really classic example of this is in Yellowstone. We removed wolves from that national park, and the herbivores came in and they decimated all of the vegetation along the rivers, which in turn led to a lot of erosion into the rivers. We reintroduced wolves. They brought the populations of the herbivores back down, and now we have healthy habitat again. So we know this happens. We just have to make sure that the predators are there. It's surprising, but they're actually really important for the prey in a weird way we wouldn't necessarily have thought of.
Well, we do appreciate you coming in and sharing all this fascinating details about how you're tracking jaguars. University of Cincinnati Associate Professor of Geology and Anthropology, Brooke Crowley. Thanks for being here.
Sure.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Subscribe to our podcast at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.